The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Greg Cockcroft from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service. Our first story is entitled Opus Dei Catholic, Who Led Dallas ICE Lawyers, Now Defends Immigrants. When Paul Hunker approached Dallas Bishop Edward Burns to introduce himself at the bishop's 2017 installation mass, he did so almost sheepishly. Hunker, then the lead counsel for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Dallas, worried Burns might give him, quote, a hard time, end quote. Just a few weeks after President Donald Trump took office and instituted a travel ban on several predominantly Muslim countries, the installation mass came at one of the few times in 31 years of working for the agency that he felt ashamed to be working for ICE. Hunker, a longtime member of the Catholic group Opus Dei, told Religion News Service. Hunker retired from ICE in early 2024 and soon after joined a private immigration law practice. Now, as the second Trump administration doubles down on a strict immigration policy, Hunker has often found himself on the opposing side of his former employer. He has criticized Trump's attack on birthright citizenship and raised concerns that Mahmoud Khalil's detention infringing on First Amendment rights. He has appeared on conservative-leaning Catholic television network EWTN and on CBS Texas to share his views and explain immigration policy. He typically doesn't talk about his membership in Opus Dei. Seeing public announcements about it at odds with his lay identity. But on an EWTN appearance, Hunker said Catholic teaching on the importance of family ties had influenced his work at ICE, as he used prosecutorial discretion to avoid deporting the family members of U.S. citizens. Hunker joined Opus Dei, Latin for the work of God, in 1988 as a student at Marquette University, a Jesuit institution. He devoted his life to the primarily lay Catholic group, finding resonance in its emphasis on achieving holiness through ordinary work done well, and in the teachings of the founder, Saint Jose Maria Escriva, about living one's faith in the world. Before that, he said, his relationship to Catholicism had been intellectual, but in Opus Dei he learned to practice the faith well. We're trying to serve and love other people and do my work well and do it as an offering, Hunker said. Opus Dei is well known for its connections to highly placed prelates and conservative politicians, and recently infamous for allegations of human trafficking. It has also been accused of propping up Spanish dictator Francisco Franco and influencing President Donald Trump's policies through support of Project 2025. But Hunker has pushed back against the Trump administration on immigration, including in spaces like the Napa Institute's summer conference last year, which has historically promoted a combative Catholic conservatism and whose founder, Tim Bush, considers himself a cooperator of Opus Dei. Hunker co-led the session on Catholic social doctrine and immigration with Burns, who at his installation in 2017 told Hunker he supported his work at ICE. Hunker's message for that audience was peppered with citations of the Catholic Catechism, Pope Francis, and church documents. The obligation of a prosperous nation to welcome foreigners is an example of the universal destination of goods. just as a wealthy person in justice should share his goods with the needy, a prosperous nation should welcome those in need, he told Napa attendees. Hunger also told Napa attendees about a 21-year-old Vietnamese lawful permanent resident who had gotten in some legal trouble and ended up in immigration detention. The young man's lawyer had already asked Hunker to dismiss the case, but when Hunker happened to run into the young man while facilitating Burns's visit to the detention center, he felt there are no coincidences, citing John Paul II, and dismissed the case. To Cecilia Gonzalez Andrio, president of the Academy of Catholic Hispanic Theologians of the United States, Hunker's public appearances look like a conversion arc. It's a story about how transformative the theology of encounter can be, she said, referencing a theological principle about forming relationships. I would never have wanted anyone to be part of the ICE system, but since he was, okay, so now he has the opportunity to really make reparations, said Gonzalez Andrio, a theology professor at Loyola Marymount University. But conversion isn't how Hunker recalls or tells it. He doesn't disavow his time with ICE, instead framing his move into private practice as a new challenge that made sense because he was eligible for retirement. Hunker is also quick to criticize the Biden administration, telling RNS the previous administration's 100-day moratorium on deportations was crazy and imprudent. He also said Biden's expansion of parole programs, which gave temporary permission and work permits to new arrivals from certain countries, played into the resentment that helped re-elect Trump, as even other immigrants felt new arrivals were getting special privileges. Hunker says he has great affection for the agents, saying ICE employees in Dallas worked to reunify families and that, when they weren't constrained by the kind of inflexible guidelines currently in place, we go after the bad guys. The agents I know, they respect people's rights. They're trying to follow the law, he said, adding, obviously, if some ICE agent misbehaves or violates someone's rights, they should be subject to discipline. Polling shows support for ICE has plummeted as videos of violent detentions and masked agents go viral. Almost 4 in 10, or 38%, of registered voters support abolishing the agency, according to a recent Civics poll. Other Catholic immigration advocates also voice skepticism of the agency. Don Kerwin, Vice President of Advocacy, Research and Partnerships for Jesuit Refugee Services USA, said ICE is pushing the rule of law at this point. Gonzalez Andreu said ICE and tearing families apart is an example of the banality of evil, which is not excused by simply following orders. We can't say that, well, they're good guys, but they're doing evil things, she said. What we are taught is you have to stop doing evil things. You have to be contrite about doing evil things. Still, both advocates say Hunker's background puts him in a position to communicate and serve in a way they cannot. Hunker is now on the Dallas Diocese Immigration Task Force as he and Burns work to reassure skittish immigrant Catholics that it's safe to go to Mass. The Trump administration is much more aggressive, but there can be undue fear out there, Hunker told RNS. There's some risk, but maybe it's more likely you'll be struck by lightning than be arrested by ICE driving to church. The attorney is trying to help Catholics have less fear and make more rational decisions, like taking public transit instead of driving without a license, which could lead to an arrest and then ICE detention. Kerwin does not share Hunker's assessment of irrational fear. I think that the people that are making those decisions are in the best position to know what the risk is, says Kerwin. He said that while risk can occasionally be exaggerated, the recent massive increase in ICE funding for the latest budget points to many more immigrants without criminal records being swept up in detention or deportation. Hunker told RNS, that's Religion News Services, I've used that acronym several times without spelling it out, Religion News Services said he was concerned about the budget increase, explaining he worried the funding is, quote, going to lead to a lot of people who aren't criminals or dangerous to society being arrested by ICE. Tim McManus, a senior organizer at Dallas Area Interfaith, an affiliate of the Industrial Areas Foundation, said Hunker had been a, quote, key ally, end quote, as organizers have tried to sort through new Trump administration policies, like a recent policy preventing migrants from leaving detention on bond while challenging their deportation. Hunker is just very clear-headed in his ability to project out what he thinks ICE counsel would argue, McManus said. Hunker's judgment has been really helpful as we've developed a legal representation strategy for people in detention. While Hunker says his values and faith haven't changed since he worked for ICE, crossing to the other side of immigration court has still been transformative for him. Before, he said he didn't fully appreciate how life-changing his routine decisions about a stay of removal or green card could be. Now, knowing his clients and their families, it's spectacular when he can get them that relief. But he's also seeing life gets harder for his non-citizen clients. Every day, attorneys like him are asking, what new horror comes down from the administration, Hunker said. Our next story. With growing urgency, more U.S. Jews urge Israel to ensure ample food deliveries to Gaza. What is clear is the ranks of American Jews alarmed by the current conditions in Gaza have swelled and now include major organizations that customarily avoid critiques of Israeli policies. This was written by Tiffany Stanley and David Crary. A broad swath of U.S. Jews, including organizations that customarily avoid critiquing Israeli policies, are speaking out about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and urging Israel to do more to ensure the delivery of food and medicine. There is no overwhelming consensus. On the left, some U.S. Jews contend that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government is guilty of genocide. On the right, some conservative Jewish news outlets have suggested the widely verified food crisis in Gaza is a hoax. What's clear is that the ranks of American Jews expressing alarm at conditions in Gaza have swelled. What are major Jewish organizations saying? The American Jewish Committee, a prominent advocacy group that strives to broadly represent Jews in the U.S. and abroad, stressed in its statement that it stands with Israel in its justified war to eliminate the threat posed by Hamas. At the same time, we feel immense sorrow for the grave toll this war has taken on Palestinian civilians, and we are deeply concerned about worsening food insecurity in Gaza, said the American Jewish Committee, urging Israel and other key parties to increase the cooperation and coordination in order to ensure that humanitarian aid reaches Palestinian civilians in Gaza. The Rabbinical Assembly, a New York-based organization representing rabbis of the conservative movement, sounded a similar note. Even as we believe Hamas could end this suffering immediately through the release of the hostages and care for its civilian population, the Israeli government must do everything in its power to ensure humanitarian aid reaches those in need, the assembly said. The Jewish tradition calls upon us to ensure the provision of food, water, and medical supplies as a top priority. Rabbi Moshe Hauer, executive vice president of the Orthodox Union, told the Associated Press he and his colleagues are proud, sad, and angry. We remain proud of Israel and its army, the only moral fighting force in the region striving to abide by internationally accepted laws of war, he said via email. We are genuinely sad about the mounting human costs which, as intended by Hamas, this war is inflicting on Israelis and innocent Palestinians. And we are angry at those who only ascribe to Israel the worst intentions and all responsibility, while ignoring Hamas's inhumanity. A spokesman for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the staunchly pro-Israel group, better known as AIPAC, welcomed Israel's latest moves to boost aid to Gaza. The true key to improving the humanitarian conditions is for Hamas to surrender power and free all 50 hostages, including the two Americans, Marshall Whitman said via email. Of major nationwide organizations, perhaps the most vehement statement came from the Reform Jewish Movement, which represents the largest branch of Judaism in the U.S. Hamas has repeatedly demonstrated its willingness to sacrifice the Palestinian people in its pursuit of Israel's destruction. But Israel must not sacrifice its own moral standing in return, the Reform statement said. No one should be unaffected by the pervasive hunger experienced by thousands of Gazans, it continued. Nor should we accept arguments that because Hamas is the primary reason many Gazans are either starving or on the verge of starving, that the Jewish state is not also culpable in this human disaster. Rabbis shared their thoughts. Over the past few weeks, as images and reports of starvation and violence in Gaza dominated the news cycle, Rabbi John Roos felt a shift in how Israel-Hamas war is discussed in Jewish circles. There was a real change in the tone of the conversation, but also in the depth and content of it, said Roos, who leads Temple Sinai, a Reform congregation in Washington, D.C. I felt it from members of the congregation. I felt it in the Jewish communal world. The clergy of Temple Sinai signed onto a letter with more than 1,000 Jewish clergy calling on the Israeli government to, quote, allow extensive humanitarian aid, end quote, to enter Gaza. It stated that we cannot condone the mass killings of civilians or the use of starvation as a weapon of war. Roos said the Jewish community can hold two truths at once, that October 7th was deplorable, and so is the situation in Gaza. One of the critical parts of Judaism is that we really value that ability to hold nuance and two truths, even if they're both incredibly challenging and self-critical, Roos said. Rabbi Aaron Weininger in Minnetonka, Minnesota, also signed the clergy letter. He leads Adaf Jehuran, a conservative Jewish congregation. Zionism is big enough and strong enough to care about the safety, well-being, and dignity of Israelis and Palestinians. Naming their suffering doesn't weaken Zionism, nor does calling on members of the government not to occupy Gaza. Signing the letter honors Zionism as compassionate and just, he wrote in an email. The response of his community has been largely positive, with some disagreement. Both with the idea of publicly disagreeing with the Israeli government and with the characterization of suffering in Gaza, he wrote. But taking moral stands and holding disagreement have always been part of what it means to be a faith community. Voices of protest. On Tuesday, more than two dozen rabbis were arrested in the office of the Senate Majority Leader, John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, while demanding action by Congress to provide food aid for Gaza. All life is sacred, but Palestinian lives are not treated as such, and that is a blot on our collective humanity, said one of the protesters, Alyssa Weiss, who is founding director of Rabbis for Ceasefire. We are here to insist on the sanctity of life of every Palestinian, of every Israeli, of all of us. Also arrested was a New York-based rabbi, Andrew Kahn. He is the executive director of the American Council for Judaism, which rejects the concept of Zionism. In an email, Kahn said an increasing number of U.S. Jews, including rabbis, are now more willing to speak out about Gaza's plight and demand policy changes from Israel. The horrors of starvation of so many people has led to the dam bursting for many people, and the political spectrum of those speaking out has broadened, he wrote. Defenders of Netanyahu's policies. A Jewish member of Congress, Representative Randy Fine, Republican of Florida, incurred criticism after suggesting in a post on X last week that the reports of a Gaza food crisis were false. Release the hostages. Until then, starve away. This is all a lie anyway. It amazes me that the media continues to regurgitate Muslim terror propaganda, his post said. Two U.S.-based Jewish news outlets have also depicted the food crisis as exaggerated. The reality is clear. Food and medicine are entering Gaza, but Hamas seizes them for its own purposes. The international community's fixation on blaming Israel ignores this fundamental truth, said an article in the Jewish Voice. Supplementing its news articles making similar points, the Jewish News Syndicate on Wednesday ran a column by Mitchell Bard, executive director of the American-Israeli Cooperative Enterprise. True supporters of Israel are not fair-weather friends who abandon their ally out of fear of what their friends will think of them or the need to feign moral superiority, he wrote. Israelis are not children in need of a public scolding from the diaspora. They need solidarity, not sanctimony. And our third story. Vatican strikes solar farm deal to become the world's first carbon-neutral state. This is from Rome. The agreement stipulates that the development of the Santa Maria Galleria site will preserve the agricultural use of the land and minimize the environmental impact on the territory, according to a Vatican statement. This article written by Nicole Winfield. And this is from the Associated Press in Rome. Italy agreed Thursday to a Vatican plan to turn a 430 hectare or 1,000 acre field north of Rome, once the source of controversy between the two, into a vast solar farm that the Holy See hopes will generate enough electricity to meet its needs and turn Vatican City into the world's first carbon-neutral state. The agreement stipulates that the development of the Santa Maria Galleria site will preserve the agricultural use of the land and minimize the environmental impact on the territory. Details weren't released, but the Vatican will be exempt from paying Italian taxes to import the solar panels, but won't benefit from the financial incentives that Italians enjoy when they go solar. Italy, for its part, can use the field in its accounting for reaching European Union clean energy targets. Any excess electricity generated by the farm beyond the Vatican's needs would be given to the local community, officials said, speaking on conditions of anonymity because the agreement was not public. Vatican officials have estimated it will cost under 100 million euros, or $114 million, to develop the solar farm, and that once it is approved by the Italian Parliament, the contracts to do the work could be put up for bids. Vatican Foreign Minister Archbishop Paul Gallagher signed the agreement with Italy's ambassador to the Holy See, Francesco Di Nitto. The Italian Parliament must approve the arrangement since it has financial implications for the territory, which holds extraterritorial status in Italy. The Santa Maria Galleria site has long been the source of controversy because of electromagnetic waves emitted by Vatican radio towers located there since the 1950s. The once rural site, some 35 kilometers or 20 miles north of Rome, is dominated by two dozen short and medium wave radio antenna that transmit news from the Catholic Church in dozens of languages around the globe. Over the years, as the area has become more developed, residents began complaining of health problems, including instances of childhood leukemia, which they blamed on the electromagnetic waves generated by the towers. The Vatican denied there was any causal link, but cut back the transmissions. Pope Francis last year asked the Vatican to study developing the area into a vast solar farm, hoping to put into practice his preaching about the needs to transition away from fossil fuels and find clean, carbon-neutral energy sources. Pope Leo XIV visited the site in June and affirmed that he intended to see Francis's vision through. Leo has strongly taken up Francis's ecological mantle, recently using a new set of prayers and readings inspired by Pope Francis's environmental legacy. In the 1990s, at the height of the controversy over the radio towers, residents sued Vatican radio officials, claiming the emission exceeded the Italian legal limit, but the court cleared the transmitter. In 2012, the Vatican announced it was cutting in half the hours of transmission from the site, not because of health concerns, but because of cost savings, technological advances in internet broadcasting. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Greg Cockcroft, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion News Services is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.